Welcome, everybody. It's time again for the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, the coaching perspective, with Master Certified Coach, Doug Gefeller. Hey, Doug.
Hey, Paul. Well, welcome to today's episode of the Coaching Perspective. Don't you love live radio, live television?
Oh,
I mean,
all
we're
this
a
stuff.
Few minutes late, but hey, we're here.
People are tweeting in saying, where's the show? We're just, you know, we're a couple minutes late. Give us a break here.
Yeah, for those of you who've been anxiously waiting, the wait's going to be worthwhile. For our guest today, I apologize. And our guest today is Jen Hamilton. Her topic is results from training and development don't last, or do they? Well, before we get to Jennifer, let me tell you, I'm your host, Doug Gefeller. I've been a Master Certified Coach by the International Coach Federation since 1999, and I have been coaching business owners, senior executives, and their teams for 20 years here in Southern California under the banner of the Coaching Perspective. If you'd like to know more about our coaching services, just go to my website, thecoachingperspective.com. Or you can reach me the old-fashioned way, 714-726-8354. Well, let's get to our show today. Our guest is Jennifer Hamilton, who is Chief Executive Officer and President of the Institute for Mastering Success. Jen has over 20 years of business, team management, and teaching experience, ranging from consulting and auditing nonprofits and universities at PricewaterhouseCoopers, Jen's a CPA, and Moss Adams, to teaching and training professionals on behalf of the California Department of Education, DeVry University, Becker CPA Review, and Grossmont College. She has a long past, a deep passion for making a difference in her community. She co-founded the Heights Charter School, founded the CAB Foundation at UC Santa Barbara, is active in the community as a partner and treasurer of the board of the San Diego Social Venture Partners, treasurer for the Alternative Healing Network, and many other organizations, too many to name. Bottom line, she is active in the community in addition to being a mother of two children. Well, Jen, welcome to the Coaching Perspective Radio Show.
Doug, thank you for having me. It's so nice to be here.
Oh, I'm so excited. Our audience doesn't know this, but we've had a couple of starts and stops trying to get Jen on the show here. She's been really patient and cooperative with us, and boy, I've been looking forward to this, Jen.
Me too. It was fun getting ready, and no worries. I'm excited to dive in. So happy to be here. Well, happy to peel back this conversation.
Well, look, let's start out with a little background. Tell us about your business, what your company does, what services, products you produce, clients, you know, all of those details that give us a feel for what you're doing now.
Be happy to, Doug. At the Institute for Mastering Success, we really serve the function of a training and development department for companies. It's like an outsourced service, similar to HR, but we just focus on the training and development side. We love to work with professional service and technical fields, really having them as a goal to get teams of promotable people, making sure that people keep moving on and doing a great job. We love to serve smaller and mid-sized companies who really don't need to pay for a full-time training department and can get the chance to save money because they get access to highly skilled trainers only when they need them. We love to work with people who have specialized skills, and let's be honest, sometimes the lawyers and accountants and financial planners and more of those technical people don't always quite know how to work with others and not maybe natural at the relationship side of their business. And that's some of our favorite people to work with, to help them really master how to work well with each other and be able to, you know, very much help each other. Because really what we believe is anytime you assign or you delegate work, you are having to do a training, teaching kind of assignment, whether you think so or not. And so there's always ways that people, when they work together and assign each other's work and be able to support each other, can do that at a much higher, much more effective level. So that's some of our favorite things to help them do better.
Wonderful. And, you know, I'm really excited about this conversation because so many times there is this debate in the coaching community about whether people are coaching or whether that's training, and you know, and maybe we'll get to that a little bit today, but I'm really interested in your take on what's really working in the training field. But first, tell us tell us about your path to where you're currently, what you're currently doing. What did you do before? How did you end up here?
It's an interesting path. You mentioned a little bit my background as a CPA, and I actually chose to work in the nonprofit and higher education field. I always had a passion for making a difference in education, and those were the clients that I chose. And even though I was working 60, 70 hours a week, I thought it would be fun to volunteer another 10 hours a week. I don't know what I was thinking, but the way that I volunteered is I actually worked in a nonprofit and doing professional skill building for college students or other professionals, for high school students. And I really ended up loving that and changed my career about 7 years after doing auditing and consulting, and went and worked in nonprofits and basically became an outsourced training department for the California Department of Education, much like we do now, but one division of the California Department of Education. It was a continuation of the volunteer work, but it also was unique in that I knew what it took to really be somebody who's a great manager and run teams out of my work as a consultant. So it was an interesting combination. But the work I did for them was training and teaching teachers and trainers of teachers. And really, if you want to talk about a hard audience to get to learn, is teachers. They think they know it all. So that was quite challenging at times, but it was really exciting to be able to see them get their students to do a much better job, more engaged, better grades, etc., just by doing different strategies that we taught them. And then, of course, when you work in a nonprofit, you don't always have the best budget. So I ran quite a bit of programs, conferences, a lot of educational things through the use of volunteers, and was able to get incredible results out of people who weren't paid. And so whether you're a student that had to show up in school and got you engaged and productive, or whether you're a volunteer that chose to be there but still wasn't paid, we were able to take those skills and sort of develop that into how could the business world benefit from these same sorts of strategies when you're at a management level or you have some supervising type of responsibilities. So we really decided, gosh, this is needed. This is missing, being able to have people understand how to support each other enough that even if you don't get paid, like we did with our volunteers, you can have an incredible work product. So that's how the evolution came about. It's just been a passion all along to have education that works and is applicable and relevant, whether it was for the students in school, college students, or really us as professionals. Same thing. We want to make sure what we're doing matters. Matters to us. Sometimes people care, like I do. It matters to the world. So that was the path that got me to this point.
Interesting. Well, you know, you mentioned passion and what a passion you had for working with nonprofits and for teaching. Kind of leads us into the question we ask all our guests about their guiding principle. What really is the guiding principle? And you and I talked a little bit about this before, so share it with the audience. I found it fascinating.
Well, you hit the nail on the head with one of them, passion. I really believe that if you're not doing what you love, then stop and find something you do. And while it's not that I didn't love public accounting, there were aspects that were not as pleasant. Let's say, like this time of year, tax season wasn't always my favorite part of the year. But I did enjoy the relationships I built and whatnot. But it wasn't driving my heart. And that's what I did, is I switched, as a perfect example, into something I was passionate about, made my volunteer work into paid work. And so you can do it too. Whether you start in a volunteer position or not, doesn't even have to be that many hours a week. But do something you love, because life is too short to not. My other guiding principle is determination. I'm really good at not giving up. If it's worth it and you love it, then just keep tweaking it until it works. It's really the other guiding principle, is I let my heart decide and, of course, my business mind. But if you let your intuition guide you a little bit through your brains and through your passion, you'll know you're going to get there at some point. Then really it's determination that needs to kick in so that you'll really achieve what you're going after.
You know, I love that combination, passion and determination, because so often we hear people say, follow your passion, and the response is, yeah, but how am I going to eat in the meantime kind of thing? And you're pairing that with the word determination to make it succeed, to keep tweaking what you're doing until it does work. What a great pairing of concepts there.
Thank you. And get creative. You know, people say, I don't have enough time. Well, try working public accounting. At the time, I was newly married and said, you know what, it's really important to me to have this time to do things that I love. And so that's what I did. Also, at that time is when I started really diving into actually getting my own coaching support, doing a lot of reading, just my own personal development as well as not just developing the community. And that was another passion of mine as well, so I could be better at teaching who I was teaching, professional skills and the new professional and whatnot. And it is important not to quit, because one sure way to fail is to quit. I have learned that. I'm sure other people have too. So my big thing is, if it didn't quite happen the way you thought it would, it just wasn't meant to be that way, and you need to find another way. There's always a solution. There's always a path you just didn't see the first time.
Well, you know, you mentioned determination, and you had talked with me a little bit about some of the setbacks that you experienced in starting your business. That was an interesting story. Why don't you share that with the audience? Because I think not only is it an interesting story, but it really is a great example of what determination really means, in the sense of not just going forward and knowing you're going to get what you want, but, as you put it, being able to tweak what you're doing along the way.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy. Well, when I originally started my company out of, I guess, just sort of ratting myself out as a compliance junkie, when you did compliance audits and for so many years in higher education, I really was committed to actually the education of professional development and really a coaching strategies that I so believed in from being a consumer of coaching and different books. I was determined to make it more official. And so the concept was, how do we take the training and development curriculum that we had designed and the courses that we had designed and actually make it credible? So we had this crazy idea. My co-founder and I had this crazy idea to start our own college. It would be the first college that offers a diploma in professional and employability skills. So we set off with our, you know, our passion in tow, and luckily also determination, because after about 2.5 years, this actually just ended last December with the state of California. We fought hard for a college, but I have personal experience that the government is not the biggest fan of out-of-the-box thinking. I know, that's shocking.
but now, there's news for our audience.
Exactly. Newsflash. Anything outside the norm is not something that's going to fly through the state of California approval process. So we ended up fighting for a college and ended up deciding that it wasn't going to work, especially when I actually had an option of either going to court to fight for our case to be heard or to start the process all over. And that had already been very costly investment of both time and money. But when I actually was at this stage of trying to fight for our right to be heard, the state's attorney was on my side, in fact, was fighting its own client to try to make the case for it. And I thought, gosh, if that state attorney can't win, I don't think my little self is going to make it. So I didn't quit in the sense of determination. It really was, as you mentioned, an example of tweaking. We said, you know, not every part of this idea of starting a college is very exciting. It's really the delivery of the content that excites us. And we said, we're not supposed to do this. Clearly, there's this sign from above, and being in San Diego, above meant Sacramento. Any other definition you might have of above, but from us, it was a sign from Sacramento. We're not meant to do this. And what we did is we said, there are other people that are even better positioned to run a college, and we're well positioned to do the training that we actually do extremely well within companies, and decided that the best process is actually going to help the community at large, as well as our content get out there, as well as let us do what we're great at, which was to be able to offer this curriculum that we had developed to other universities, and we're in the process right now of making that happen, which to me is actually even more exciting. It's the vision being at a much bigger level. So as much as you can kind of fight back the cussing and the tears that can go through a process like this, if you step back and see the bigger picture, the determination did win in the end, as well as my passion for this kind of education getting out there.
Well, and you know, the other thing I like about that story, besides really being a great example of your determination, is that it really caused you to reevaluate what really is your skill set as a company. Mm-hmm. And what do you really need to do to focus totally on that skill set? And the having a college was just a way, as I understand your story, to get the vehicle to be able to do what you do, which is to teach, to train.
Absolutely.
And I think so often many of us get sidetracked in not taking the time to clearly evaluate what really is it that we are good at and that we should be spending our time focused on.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We had a hard look at the question, and actually it was somewhat early on in the process, because as we went through the process of this college, it started to look closer and closer at, like, this might not happen that soon, and we always had as plan two, once the college was set up, to do corporate training and kind of go into that world. So as we started to see, gosh, this state's slower than they even said they would be, no surprise there either, but we decided it was time to start really evaluating the corporate training side. And what we ended up finding is that we loved that even more, and did two hard questions, which I think is exactly what you're saying, and certainly what I would recommend to anyone. What is it you are the best at, and what is it that somebody else is the best at, and how can you combine those two things? And that was the two important questions. You know, where are we not going to be the best at? Not just where can we be the best at. And I think what we're oftentimes in business, we're so excited about, ooh, I want to do this, I want to do that, and forget about, maybe I'm not the best. Maybe we aren't actually positioned well, or somebody else is positioned better, and we never will be. And let's let them do that, and we'll do this.
Well, you know, that isn't what I was saying. That's better than what I was saying. I stopped short. I said identifying what you're best at, but I liked what you did there. You said, and identify what other people are best at, and how can you put that team together? And, you know, really in today's, integrated, electronic, connected society, very seldom do we get to do something alone. It is so much more effective when we can team with others, and that's exactly what you're pointing to. I love that. That's Thank you for correcting me on that. That really is a key point. No, I missed it, really. It's not just what you're best at.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Determination will help you figure that out.
So clarify for me, when you say you do training and development, what do you train people on? What if I go to one of your classes, what am I learning?
Well, what's interesting about our firm is that we have two different answers to that question. The content that we provide is much like the content we created for the college courses, although they're not in that format. They're very consumable by a business user in terms of it's not like you're committing to a four-month thing, although there are definitely different options. The types of things that the content we provide is more the professional skills, the supervisory skills. So anything from things that will have you be more engaged, more teachable, more accountable, more responsible with an integrity, all of those sort of character building sides, as well as the more technical sides of being a professional in terms of managing your time, prioritizing, organizing, all of this kind of traditional, like, what does it take to actually produce something well and on time? And then finally, for those who are in a more supervisory type role or they have some responsibility for others, we'll also help them to know how to make others teachable and willing to do the work, engaged, if you will, self-motivated, and really focus on the person wanting to do the work versus just forced to do the work. So that's the kind of content we can provide. The second answer to that, and this is where being an outsourced training department is more exciting in terms of a unique look at it. What we're also uniquely positioned to do is when a company is internally having other people do their work, in other words, they assign work, they delegate work, they are in essence training. And so one of the content areas we provide, or the services we provide, is to help them deliver their own internal training. In other words, how do I need you to do my job? We will help them develop that from a documentation point of view and from a delivery point of view, so that the people who are supervising actually become better teachers. So we teach them how to be great at teaching their staff and facilitating them through the process, as well as how to document it, so that essentially it's kind of like a succession planning at every level of a company. No one should leave without another person being able to pick up where they left off and run with it. So that's the other sort of content we focus on, is people's own internal processes and way of completing their work within their company is documented and trainable, so they can continue to move on regardless of who's doing the job.
Okay. Great answer. I have a better understanding now of what you're doing. Thank you very much for that.
You're welcome.
Who are the, give me an example of the people or companies that utilize your services in terms
of
trades?
Sure. So sometimes we'll work with individuals, especially at a manager or management type level, and sometimes their staff. And in that case, it's anywhere from CPAs, work with lawyers, financial folks, anyone technical, sometimes in the manufacturing world as well, that they have really specialized skills. And oftentimes they're promoted because they're great at the technical part, and then they're just kind of going, oh no, now I'm responsible for making other people great, and I don't know how to do that. So that's an area where we really enjoy working with individuals. In terms of companies, again, sort of in those professional service worlds, the technical field worlds, where we're really looking at how do you transfer the knowledge of exactly how to do each of our positions, especially in highly specialized skills, but can be simple skills as well. So those are the types of clients we love to work with. Again, people who aren't necessarily born with the gift of relationships. That's a lot of the work that we do, because whether it's working with your clients or your coworkers, you do need to know how to...
What isn't, you know, we talk so much about training and development, and one of the things that I think is really impacting, and I'd like your take on it, is the fact that we have the demographics of the workforce today. We have 3, 4, 5 generations all at the same time sitting next to each other, working together with very different preferential learning styles, and how do you deal with that in your business? How's that
good
impacting?
Question. You could say we're often hired because of millennial issues, which I think is not the most polite way to put it, but I think that might be a little bit what you're pointing to. And also baby boomers, and especially as we mentioned, a lot of the work we do is knowledge transfer. We have an incredible generation that is trying to figure out exactly that. How do I get this person that maybe doesn't learn or doesn't process in the same way as I do, they might not be as loyal as I do. They might feel like they're entitled to something else. These are some of the complaints that we hear and that we deal with. And it might be somewhat you're hearing as well, or your audience is hearing. And the ways that we actually deal with it is we deal with it in two different ways. In particular, we deal with it for each generation. What we try to break down is that, again, going back to that relationship, where can you, instead of see your differences, where can you see your similarities and your common commitments? So in other words, find some area of agreement. Where can we both be on the same page? It may not be music. It may not be lifestyle. But where it can be is, at the end of the day, we all want to do a good job and get home and you know, go to bed at night feeling like I stood up today, I did a great job, and I can feel good about myself. That's something we can all relate to, is that sense of excellence and doing mastery of your own position. So in terms of a starting point to get the generations to come together, it is a way of saying, how can we together be stronger and at the end of the day get this darn thing done? And instead of coming from, which is, I think, a lot of the generational problems are just even calling it generational issues almost makes it separate. In terms of, instead of seeing the similarities and where can we work together, a lot of times people are so focused on why are we different instead of why are we the same. So at a very basic level, that's where we begin. We actually just had a conversation with our community called the Millennial Migraine. And to dig into some of these issues, and what we were sharing is where the migraine is on both sides, not just the supervisor, kind of more traditionally the older generation side, but also from the millennial side, and started to help each other see what do each other want. So there is both a sense of loyalty, but they may have loyalty to different things. It may traditionally be said at a millennial level, they have a loyalty to self and sometimes community, I want to change the world. And it may be said at, say, a baby boomer generation, have loyalty to the company. And yet, there is a way to kind of marry those two things together, that there is still a sense of loyalty. And how can you have a sense of loyalty to the company, yet it also serves yourself and the community? So it's a matter of just looking at where can these underlying commitments come together instead of stay apart.
Okay.
Hopefully that makes sense in terms of the way we start to deal with it.
Well, and I'm glad to hear you're dealing with it, because it is such a prominent issue, and we hear it as complaints, when I think, you know, to pick up on your theme, if we just recognize it as differences in styles,
mm-hmm.
and looked for where we are alike in styles and then build from there, it would be so much easier.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is much easier that way. And also just kind of understanding each other's perspective, where that's so much easier to find a similarity or a common ground, if you will, when you understand, oh, this person is coming from that place. I can respect that. I can get that, you know, on either side of the argument, if you will, or either side of the generation, and or either side of the Gen X, which is my generation. We're sort of stuck in the middle. We don't get any credit for anything. We're just sort of the no man's land of generations. But having to, you know, really seek, where is that person coming from, and can I relate to that? And oftentimes you can. We all have a sense of mastery. We all have a sense of purpose. And some may have it more strongly than others, but you can relate. You can appreciate that sense of entitlement from the place of, I would like to just feel great at something and have a chance to be challenged. We can appreciate that. But if we see it as entitlement, it's kind of annoying.
Yeah,
but break it down and see where it's coming from.
So the label becomes important there. Well, look, what do you see, and this is a really broad question, but what isn't working in the corporate training and development world today? And then what are you offering, or what do you see does work well? Because, you know, so, I mean, we hear so many times people look at their budgets and they talk about, you know, we spend all this money for training and seminars and webinars and all of these other things, and we don't see any changes at all. Mm-hmm. Why should we do it?
Yeah, in fact, one of the things that we come out from the gate and saying when we're doing our training and education is that a lot of times traditional training, traditional education, you might learn something. If you're lucky, you might even feel motivated. But then, let's face it, you go back to your pile of work, and you might have even some notes from a conference or training or seminar that you, your company is invested in, and it goes into the pile of good intentions. I think we all can secretly admit to our pile of good intentions. And oftentimes that's where education and training ends up, is that I'll get back to that someday, because you've got this, these fires, if you will, or the typical work that you have, and you go and get back to what you've always done. And maybe within a few weeks, you don't even remember what you learned. Sometimes you don't even remember, and it's exactly what you need to deal with the problem you're facing. So I would say that's probably the biggest reason there's so much frustration in investing in training and development, because what's missing is a way to integrate and apply and ensure that the lessons that are learned that are applicable to the work are actually retained and put into place. It's not enough to just get knowledge. Some people will say knowledge is power, and I say knowledge plus consistent action is real power. Knowledge doesn't do jack, essentially, unless you do something with it. My best way to kind of explain this as a way for you to judge for yourself is if you look at outside of the corporate world, if you look at America, I think most people would agree we have an obesity issue. But if you went along the street and asked, what do you do to lose weight? I would say most people, if not all, would say diet and exercise. You probably just said it in your own head.
Yep.
But the problem is knowing that isn't changing the problem. What has to happen is you actually have to diet and exercise, but not just one day. Just like with training and education, you can't just do one day. You actually have to make it a part of your daily practice. And that's my best example of what's not working and what's missing in the training and development world. In fact, there's some really wonderful statistics about the difference between training that is that traditional, just go learn something and you're good for, you know, an hour or even a conference. Let's say you even go for a few days. But what happens is getting a new skill or new thing isn't applied to the work most often. In fact, there was a study by Joyce and Showers on the impact of coaching. This study was done in 2002, and I imagine it would be the same kind of results today. And when people actually just got theory or discussion or even a demonstration, so they might role play or, you know, in traditional training, they might just have you do an activity. You might get some feedback during the training. And the most that they'll actually apply into their work is about 5% of what they learn. 5%,
that's
it. When you actually add a coaching or an ongoing support, in other words, there's some level of accountability to integrate the information that is being learned, which is why this is such a great coaching perspective, if you will, that percentage of use of these new skills goes up to 95%. Not 5%. 95% now of these skills are actually being used in work because there's an ongoing, consistent action element. Pretty incredible.
And I've seen the same results. There was a study of a college in Canada that it was based upon, where they sent people to seminars and then some got provided a coach after and some didn't. And the results were pretty much the same as what you're talking about here. So how does your training and development take advantage of that knowledge?
Great question. So part of what we do, whatever we do, I mentioned we have two different kind of formats for the content we deliver. If we're doing a more traditional training where you're presenting information, we do make it more interactive, but we always do two parts to our training. Part one is the delivery of the information. Part two is actually a one-on-one applicable to your life conversation. So we meet with any participant in our training and say, first of all, we check for understanding what of what the content we provided in that training did you not understand or need some clarification. It's not always the most comfortable thing in a group, especially if you're in a company. You don't want to tell your coworkers sometimes or your boss if they're in the room, hey, I don't understand, or I secretly have this problem that I'm really bad at, and you know, I just want to let you guys all know. It's not a safe environment always in like, oh, does anyone have any examples to share when you're doing training? It doesn't feel safe to be vulnerable and share your real issues. You also might have complaints about other people in the room. So we always have the second part that allows for them to share with us what's really happening in your day-to-day life, and then make sure that they understand the connection between the content and what to do to apply that into their daily life so that they can practice. And some of our clients will choose to go beyond, and that's where they'll have the ongoing, like much like you would in a coaching relationship, have ongoing accountability and application. So that's one way to make sure that it gets closer to that 95% retention and application of what's learned, is that really just say, how does this information relate to your life, and what action steps are you going to take to put this into your daily practice? That's one side of it. The second side is that we make sure when education is taught, even if we're not the ones teaching it, that those who are responsible for assigning and delegating work and holding their team accountable to deliver results, they know how to take the information that was learned. Let's even say it was new technology or a new sales strategy, and make sure that the managers or supervisors, the people holding others responsible, can say, okay, let's put this into your daily practice. I'm going to hold you accountable to it. We're going to make sure you understand it. And so you're not as likely to go back to those old ways, because it's really integrated into expectations from above, and people just kind of have no way to get out of it. It's like we have to do it. We're being called on it, and they're being presented in a way that they can buy into it. So you don't want to just delegate and dump. You want to delegate and develop. You know, you want to make sure the person is excited. They're feeling they're developing. So it's a combination of getting not just us to help, but we really sort of wean people off of us and make sure their managers are just as good as us at holding them accountable to apply what people are learning.
Great answer. You know, and I think this is a wonderful opportunity for coaches to take advantage of, is that in their coaching specifically to support new learning, new training that clients are going through, to see that they actually are aware of and develop the awareness to apply it and use it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I was going to say, when we think about it, for those of us coaches on the line in the audience, and those of us who are really committed to people's development and growth as our chosen way to make a difference, what we care about is that people will use it. And so if there's any way we can make that a little bit easier for them to use it a little bit better, a little bit more likely, in the end, your difference and really the return on investment of your client is going to skyrocket. But it's so much more rewarding when you look back and say, gosh, they're still using it. It's so great.
Well, look, Jen, not to take away from what your business does, but any quick hit? I mean, okay, so I've listened to this conversation. I'm excited about it. Whether I'm a trainer, a coach, or somebody going through some learning, any tips on what I could do myself to immediately start to enhance my long-term return?
Absolutely. So if, and just to be clear, for a coach or for like a corporation or both?
Both. Either and or.
Sure. So For a coach, I think this is wonderful because oftentimes the strategy with the coaching is a long-term relationship with your client, and the easiest way is to make sure that the person who is receiving the information is committed to putting the action in place, that they're clear on the action steps they're going to take, and that you have some way to check in with them to see how they did. And so oftentimes that's called accountability. And this will work, too, for managers as well in a company, just to make sure you have a system and structure in place to hold them accountable. One thing I would say about accountability is to actually treat it as a learning opportunity versus a discipline opportunity. I think accountability gets a bad rap, and it actually can be quite the gift. When you're checking in, whether, again, this is a coaching client or you're a company and you're in the HR world or executives or managers, look to make sure there's nothing missing in that person's understanding or training for why they didn't complete something versus just automatically come from a disciplinary point of view. That's the first approach we take, is what don't you understand or learn, or what's missing in your education or your knowledge or your skills that's causing this to happen. So it's less about you missed this deadline, let's say, and why did you miss this deadline? Are you not clear on how best to prioritize? Were we unclear and we gave you too many projects? Do you need to know how to make sure you communicate to us in a way that we can then prioritize for you, because you've got too many people telling you to do too many things? So get to the cause of why something's not happening, and they'll be much more likely to implement it and keep it going versus just giving up because it's not working. Hopefully that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that's a great tip.
Thank you.
What I heard that was kind of new to me, because as a coach, I'm immediately jumping from, okay, the client has learned something new, and now I shift into sort of accountability, and I don't like that word either, accountability mode, which says that are they really using it, are they applying it, sort of thing. The step I've missed that I heard from you today is the in-between step that says, is there something you didn't understand about what you learned, or something that would keep you from implementing what you learned that we need to talk more about before we go into the accountability phase? Do I have that right?
Absolutely. It's, to me, if there's a need for an accountability conversation, I look at it as a symptom, not the cause. Oftentimes people jump to the conclusion like, oh, well, you're a procrastinator as the cause, when really I like to see it as a symptom, and I want to dig under and see what's the cause, what's the sort of disease at play, if you will, that needs to be fixed. And so you're exactly right. What might be causing that symptom instead of this is the problem? Procrastination is a problem, of course, but it could be a symptom of something underlying that they may not even know how to properly plan their day out. And that's what we need to teach, versus just trying to do, oh, well, for procrastination, you need to just make sure you put this on your to-do list so you don't get it, don't miss it or whatnot. We might teach the wrong lesson, in other words.
Excellent. Well, look, we're getting close to running out of time here. This could go on. We're gonna have to have you back again. This is a fascinating conversation. I really am enjoying it. But
Me too.
Before we wrap up, is there anything that you wanted to get across that you didn't get a chance to talk about, or something that I talked over that you want to make sure the audience is aware of?
I think the biggest thing is to really not give up on coaching or training development. I don't know, whatever your relationship is to learning, if you look at all the highly successful people, they always are constantly reading, they're constantly learning, constantly growing, they're constantly saying, I don't know it all, and I know I can be better and improve. So if you have that commitment to lifelong learning, I wouldn't give up and just assuming you're not going to get the results. Look at why might you not be getting the results, especially from a place of am I putting what I'm learning into action? So it's kind of more of a summary, but there is such clear evidence that being a lifelong learner is a direct relationship to your level of success, financial success as well as fulfillment success. But don't give up and just assume it's not working. Look at where you can be taking more action or get more clarity. That would be kind of my last little piece to make sure that you don't, as we kind of mentioned, the title of this focus is that results from training and development don't last, or do they? They can last if you keep applying it.
Great. And okay, so how does someone get in touch with you or learn more about your firm?
Well, thank you for asking. For me personally, I'm happy to have a conversation with anyone and help you discover what might be those causes if you've got some symptoms, if you're not quite getting what you want. And my phone number is 619-308-6898. You can reach me directly at 101. Again, 619-308-6898, 101. You can also catch my email at jhamilton@instituteformasteringsuccess.com. You can find me also on our website, instituteformasteringsuccess.com.
Great. And, of course, you're also all over the social media place with LinkedIn,
yes.
Facebook, Twitter, and everything else.
Absolutely. So, you can get those links from our website as well.
Great. Well, look, when we put today's conversation up on our podcast, I will make sure that I've listed your website so people can go there, and from there they can easily find you. You have a nice website, and it's got some nice information about you and your business partner, and so that's great.
Thank you.
Well, look, I want to thank you very much for being a guest today, and welcome you to the Coaching Perspective radio community. It's been a fascinating conversation, and we'll look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you so much, Doug, and thank you for everyone listening. It's been my pleasure.
Thanks, Jen. Have a great evening.
Thank you. Bye.
Well, look, we've been listening to Jennifer Hamilton, of President, CEO of Mastering Success, talking about training and development. Are you getting your money's worth? Are you getting the long-term ROI that we always hope to get out of this kind of commitment? So if you've missed it, catch the podcast. We'll have it up on our sites next week. Also, I want to just remind you that next week our radio show guest will be Michael Stratford. Michael is going to be talking about the most excellent adventure, coaching. Michael has a strong belief that one of the things we're losing in some of our coaching as we work to develop systems and procedures, we're losing the adventuresome spirit that coaching is all about. Michael labels himself as a provocateur, and believe me, if you've had a conversation with him, it's a well-earned title. So he's going to be on the show. He's also going to be the guest right after the show at the ICF Orange County meeting, which will be at the Wyndham Hotel at 6 o'clock on April 9th. Well, thank you very much for listening. Be sure to check our website and our podcast sites for past shows, and to hear Jennifer again if you didn't get all of it, and it would be impossible to take advantage of all of it without listening to it again. So this is Doug Gefeller saying thanks for joining. Hope that you got information today that you can put to immediate use. Have a great evening.